This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear about the new Center for Conservation and Stewardship that's being created at Roe Woods. Starting us off today, the Food and Drug Administration says it's going to regulate electronic cigarettes just like it regulates traditional tobacco products. Many smokers are using e-cigarettes as a way to quit, and despite some claims they work, there are still concerns about e-cigarette health risks, which remain largely unknown. Here to discuss e-cigarettes are University of Cincinnati Department of Environmental Health professor and epidemiologist member of the UC Cancer Institute and Cincinnati Cancer Center, Dr. Susan Penny, professor at the UC College of Pharmacy, Dr. Jane Primmer, and professor at the UC College of Medicine and director for the Toxicology Excellence for Risk Assessment Center, Dr. Michael Dorson. You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jane, Susan, and Mike, thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, top of the day to you.
Talk about, Susan, how much do we know about e-cigarettes? How much research has been done to this point, and how much do we really know about them?
Research in looking at the effects of e-cigarettes, looking at all kinds of aspects of e-cigarettes, what's delivered from when you're vaping, what are the exposures, what happens in your body, a lot of that is really unknown. Research is just really beginning. There have been small studies up until now, but it's only with the much broader use of e-cigarettes have more studies come forward. We do know that e-cigarettes contain nicotine, just like traditional cigarettes. But unlike traditional cigarettes, they can contain much higher concentrations of nicotine. And therefore, with inhalation, people get more of a response, especially if they're using the higher concentrations. But even if they are using the cartridges with having a similar concentration to traditional cigarettes. So that's one of the concerns. One of the concerns is young adults using e-cigarettes. What actually happens is the nicotine affects the neurotransmitters in the brain, and these higher concentrations of nicotine can, over time, reset the amount of nicotine that's needed for that response. So one of the concerns that's come forward out of research is concerns about resetting those receptors and young people needing higher levels of nicotine to get the same response.
Mike, how much, and just building on what Susan's been talking about, how much do we really know at this point about e-cigarettes?
Well, I agree with Dr. Penny. There is an FDA group that's devoted strictly to tobacco products, and one of their missions or research objectives is to figure out what the health risks are to the e-cigarettes. There is some reduction of, if you compare them to normal cigarettes, there's a big reduction in the types of chemicals that you actually put into your lungs from regular cigarette smoking versus vaping or some other form of inhaling that. However, there are unknowns about the flavorants. There's also unknowns about the nicotine, how quickly it gets in. So there's, again, a number of unknowns that Dr. Penny mentioned and our FDA colleagues are exploring to see if this is a safe substitute, equally safe, or more harmful. And we're still working on that.
One of the substances you wouldn't encounter in an e-cigarette is tar. Is that correct?
Well, that's true. Tar is something you're not going to get into an e-cigarette. And there's a number of other chemicals that you won't be putting into your lungs. So in some regards, if people want to break the habit of cigarette smoking, going to an e-cigarette has that advantage. But again, there are a number of other disadvantages. Nicotine is addictive. And so that's a problem because you take this in, you can become addicted to it. Dr. Penny talked about the variable levels of nicotine in the various products. That's also an issue because nicotine is like most chemicals, it's a poison at fairly low doses. So you can get situations where people are exposed to not the vaping per se, but the bottle which has the vaping liquid in it.
The liquid, yeah.
A child gets a hold of that. That's a serious problem.
Are we seeing the poisoning become a problem with these? Is that going up, Susan?
Yes, certainly. There have been results that don't have exactly the data, but many additional calls to poison centers for kids who have gotten into e-cigarette cartridges. And there certainly have been deaths of kids who have sucked on the cartridges, gotten a very high dose of nicotine, which causes their heart rate to go up very fast, causes very high blood pressure, and can cause death.
Now, you were talking earlier, Susan, about how we're not sure exactly how much nicotine someone might be getting in these. Are the doses standardized, or can it vary from product to product?
Well, certainly it can vary from product to product, and the consumer can choose what level of nicotine they would like to receive. I mean, what level of nicotine they would like to have in their cartridge.
Mm-hmm. Something Mike mentioned, too, flavorants. So we're actually getting flavored vaping now?
That seems to be the trend, and Mike can talk about this too, but one of the flavorings that I have been told is very popular is a butter flavor. But the chemical that produces that butter flavor is called diacetyl, which is a chemical also that has been linked to a very serious lung disease in workers who make butter flavoring. And in fact, some consumers of huge amounts of butter-flavored popcorn have also had lung disease from this chemical.
You're absolutely correct. The Department of Environmental Health, Dr. Andy Mayer, led an effort to set the safe level for diacetyl. And actually, I was unaware of until just earlier this morning, Dr. Penny and Dr. Poomer talking with them about this idea of this particular chemical being as one of the flavorants. So again, part of the unknown that we need to further explore before we can, as this product gets rolled out, to make sure it's safe or somehow regulate it so that it's treated as it is. It's a drug. Nicotine is a drug, and cigarettes are a drug delivery system, as according to the Food and Drug Administration. So you really have to be able to regulate this.
I agree with the other speakers. It struck me as a little odd to have a bubblegum flavored nicotine product, and I thought, who are they trying to target for that? And is that really the person who's attempting to quit smoking? And is that, you know, the real reason that bubblegum flavor became popular as well?
Well, Jane, how much is usage among kids and teenagers growing? Isn't that a huge concern?
I think it very much is because, again, of the lack of regulation in age for purchase of products. I think that many young people feel that, in fact, vaping is kind of a neat term. You know, it sounds like it's pretty hip, right? But that the use of these products, they, in their minds, believe it's much, much safer than smoking cigarettes. But I guess I come more from the aspect of people trying to quit smoking. And we do have much more well-proven alternatives to help people quit smoking as well. Mm-hmm. That would even avoid the nicotine and hypertension and all those things that come along with it.
You know, flavors like bubble gum have been in bubble gum, which you chew. And these flavorings have not really been studied in something that you heat and inhale. So that's just one of the places we have a huge lapse of knowledge. What kind of health effect do you get when these flavors are heated and you inhale them?
What about the secondhand smoke from e-cigarettes? Is it the same as from a regular cigarette?
I don't remember seeing any studies.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect the same kind of secondhand smoke. I mean, again, when you burn a tobacco product or some sort of vegetative material, you get a lot of different kinds of chemicals in there. Nicotine, in the case of cigarettes, being one of them. And a tobacco plant has nicotine at a fairly high concentration. Other plants also have nicotine. Even tomatoes have a wee bit of it. But the point is, it's a high concentration. You burn it, you get that nicotine in along with a lot of other things. When you vape, you're getting mostly the nicotine, water vapor, and some of these flavorants, of which we do have some. We don't have knowledge on these kinds of things. I wouldn't imagine it's the same level of number of type of chemicals or maybe even the concentrations. But again, this is why it's unknown, and research would be encouraged.
So, Susan, the FDA ruling that just came out earlier this month, what's the impact of that? What does it mean?
Well, it means that the FDA will be able to review all these products, regulate the products. It means that before new products come on the market, they will have to be approved by the FDA. I think that certainly I would expect to see some regulation on the concentration of nicotine in the cartridges. At some point, these concentrations become a drug rather than just the concentration of nicotine in a cigarette. And I just want to mention one other thing as a follow-up to what Jane said. The CDC actually does surveys to track the use of e-cigs in young people. And in the last report, although use is still, I think percents are now greater than 10%, but it tripled in 1 year. Use tripled. The percent of kids that used e-cigarettes tripled in 1 year. So that's something we should be very concerned about, again, because of the levels of nicotine, the behavior, it establishes the behavior. And some small studies have shown that most people who use e-cigarettes either go back to or go on to traditional tobacco cigarettes within 1 year.
So with the FDA, is that going to control the age at which you can purchase electronic
cigarettes? We already have laws in Ohio and Kentucky, I know for sure, and I think Indiana too, that no one under 18 supposedly can purchase an e-cigarette.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Mike, do we have any idea about how e-cigarette usage compares with traditional cigarette usage? I mean, are there more e-cigarette smokers now than traditional smokers? Or
I'm not really up on all that kind of information. My impression is it's a lot lower than traditional cigarette smoking. I think the point I wanted to get – I just want to enhance what Dr. Penny and Dr. Pumer had said before, especially about – with adults that, for one reason or another, need to vape or take e-cigarettes. There are children around, and you have to treat this as a drug. You have to make sure children can't access this kind of information because it is defined by FDA as a drug delivery system, and I'm really happy to hear that FDA is coming out with rules and regulations on how to treat this. But as a parent, you need to treat it like any other drug. Make sure children can't access it, and those kinds of things.
Do I have any idea how long before the FDA ruling takes effect?
They expect lawsuits, so I think it's going to be a while. Just to follow up on one thing with the kids, the access to the nicotine cartridges. I was reading somewhere where most cases where small children get access to the nicotine cartridges, they've gone into a purse. And, children just love, they're fascinated by what's in their mother's pocketbook. In fact, I think there's a story, what's in mommy's pocketbook,
Okay.
And so you can see how children are fascinated by these things and then smell and taste the flavoring.
We will continue our conversation about e-cigarettes, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Here to discuss e-cigarettes are University of Cincinnati Department of Environmental Health professor and epidemiologist member of the UC Cancer Center, Cancer Institute and Cincinnati Cancer Center, Dr. Susan Penny, professor at the UC College of Pharmacy, Dr. Jane Prumer, and professor at the UC College of Medicine and director for the Toxicology Excellence for Risk Assessment Center, Dr. Michael Dorson. And you can join us, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Jim and Colerain. Hi, Jim.
How you doing? How you doing?
Good, thank you.
I just want to say, first of all, I agree that we definitely should do whatever we can as parents to keep it out of the, little hands. But a mom's pocketbook could have a gun or opioids. I mean, it's all the same. I mean, if you're a parent and you're concerned, you need to be concerned about, everything you're doing. But I really think it's the lesser of the two evils. I've seen a lot of people quit smoking by using these devices. I have not seen the amount of advertising geared toward children. I know you said the bubble gum flavor, but there's a lot of adults who enjoy bubble gum. But anyway, and lastly, what I'd like to say in parting is that I wish that the FDA would spend a lot more time in what our kids are eating at fast food restaurants and even for what we buy at the grocery store, for that matter, I think we'd all be a lot better off.
Okay. Jim, thank you for the call. Mike?
Yeah. Again, thank you very much for the question. Yeah, the idea of vaping and trying to step away from smoking tobacco-based products or using tobacco to get to the nicotine high, I would agree that that's a step in the right direction. There is a little bit more protection there. I certainly, if I had the choice between the two, I would, because I needed nicotine, I would vape versus smoking a cigarette. But I also agree, and this is, I suppose, the important point from my perspective, is nicotine is a drug. It's addictive, and you have to be very careful about making sure younger people don't get this product because it is addictive, and young people are not necessarily in the ability to make those kind of choices. There are good sources of information for e-cigarettes. We have a kids' chemical safety website that's got a couple different stories on that, and there's a place for parent questions if you have more. Wikipedia has a very good discussion that seems very well referenced on nicotine itself, so you can see the history and use of nicotine, and also its effects in people. So again, a good point made there. If there wasn't any good aspect to the problem or to the product, we wouldn't as a society be doing this. But again, there are some dangers and parents need to be responsible for protecting their children.
Just a couple comments on the use of e-cigarettes to assist in smoking cessation. Currently, I'm not aware of great guidelines on how to do that. So my concern with substituting e-cigarettes for regular smoking is that people really eventually get off of the e-cigarettes? Because we know chronic use of nicotine itself is not healthy, contributing to hypertension and peripheral vascular disease and other things. And so perhaps until there are some real clinical trials that have examined the best way to use e-cigarettes in some kind of a tapering fashion, I think but until we have that, smoking cessation programs probably aren't going to be utilizing or recommending a lot of the e-cigarette usage. We have tons of data over the last 20 to 30 years on nicotine patches, nicotine gum, et cetera, as well as other products that can perhaps mitigate some of the complications of going through smoking cessation programs. But I think the other thing to mention is that when you're trying to quit smoking, you want to combine not only the physiological aspects that you get from cigarettes, but also all of the behavioral aspects that go along with it. And we know that people who are most successful have to address both areas. So I'm not exactly sure that e-cigarettes are going to be the easy answer for the majority of patients.
513-419-7100. Evan in Westchester joins us now. Hi, Evan.
Hi there. So I was calling in. I am a past smoker. I smoked for 8 years, and then I picked up vaping about 3 years ago, and I've completely quit cigarettes. So just kind of give a little background to why I'm calling. I think a lot of what we're talking about today, especially with the FDA deeming regulations kind of hanging over everybody's head right now, I don't necessarily think we're even barking up the right tree, because essentially FDA is trying to ban e-cigarettes in general outside of basically anything that was manufactured after 2007. They have to pay $1 million per product to have the FDA even review the product to see if it's okay to put on the market or not. Because of how new the industry is, what it seems to me is that it's a blanket extinguishing of all access to anything involving e-cigarettes, e-liquids, and that sort of thing. So I just kind of wanted to bring that to attention, and also the fact that there is a bill out kind of circulating right now, H.R. 2058, that is essentially opposing some of the regulations that are put through by the FDA deeming regs. So I just wanted to kind of get some more information on that from you guys and kind of see where you guys stand on the FDA deeming regs.
Okay, Evan, before we let you go, as far as you say you were able to use vaping to stop smoking?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so...
Yep, I've been off of cigarettes for about 2.5 years.
Okay. Evan, thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
Okay, well, Evan, I had a question for you, if you don't mind, or if maybe he's still not on, but has he continued to vape or not? And if that's the case... I'm sure he's being very protective of the younger people in his family from gaining access to that kind of material.
Because that's your big concern. It's an adult decision, right, is what you're saying. But you need to make sure you're taking steps to.
Absolutely. And again, with many adult decisions, there's elements of risk. We all have taken risk in our lives each day. In the case of vaping, there's still some unknowns here, especially with some of the flavorants and burning flavorants. I mean, they may be safe to take – this sounds a little bit odd, but they may be safe to take orally. But when you burn them and put them in your lungs, that's a different kind of chemistry and a different kind of exposure. And quite honestly, we don't know a lot about that. So that's an additional risk that the adult would be taking on perhaps.
I guess it's fair to say we just don't know enough about long-term effects of
these
cigarettes.
Definitely. You know, I'd like to follow up on something Jane said. Jane mentioned that nicotine has the effects of increasing blood pressure, actually causing, is linked to increased heart disease and increased arteriosclerosis. If your blood pressure is increased, you know, there's more pressure against the side of your arteries, and that can cause inflammation and the buildup of plaque. And we've all heard about plaque and coronary artery disease. Most people, when they think of cigarettes, focus on lung cancer. And through the magic of statistics, we generally say that of the deaths caused by lung cancer, 85 to 90% are attributable to smoking. What most people don't realize is of deaths coming from chronic heart disease or atherosclerosis, probably about 30% of those are attributable to smoking. But in a public health sense, the real clincher is that there are so many more deaths due to heart disease than smoking that when you look at the number of deaths of heart disease attributable to smoking, they're about 3 times the number of deaths as the number of lung cancer deaths attributable to smoking. So nicotine has the cardiovascular effects. By continuing to have products out there that deliver nicotine, we're continuing the same level, probably, of cardiovascular effects.
Let's talk with Beth in Williamstown, Kentucky. Hi, Beth.
Hi. I just wanted to say, I think they need to regulate a little bit of the advertising because the commercials make it look really cool. But then also, several people that I work with have started vaping. Some of them have not smoked it all in the past, but they have contests like at work to see who can turn the nicotine up the highest and not choke on it. And I know some of the stores that these people go to get their flavorings and nicotines and stuff. The stores will actually have contests to see who can blow the largest cloud or the longest stream of vapor without choking on it. And the one guy has won several times. He won $1,000 one time, and then he won like several hundred dollars worth of, you know, flavoring and nicotines another time. And I just think to have contests for that is a little too much.
Yeah.
Because they really, really encourage it.
Yeah. This is Mike. Beth, thank you so much for your comment there. This reminds me of a contest that was many years ago somewhere out west where someone was paying or giving a reward for somebody drinking too much water. And a young mother didn't win the contest. She drank so much water, she died. So it sounds like the same thing here. Nicotine is a poison, like every chemical, actually. It has certain doses. But in the case of nicotine, it doesn't take a lot to kill you. And so people that are having contests with nicotine in this fashion are really taking a risk, and businesses that promote this are taking a financial risk. So again, thank you for this information. I would encourage businesses out there that are perhaps promoting this to rethink that kind of strategy. It's not health protective.
We had a comment from Ken who said he started smoking in the service and he switched to vaping and feels much better as a result. He says if the FDA regulates and taxes are raised because of that, he feels like that's going to make it harder for those who are trying to quit smoking, because I guess it would discourage them from using vaping as an alternative. So any thoughts on that?
Well, that's probably true. I mean, I think we first have to say we don't really know what the FDA is going to do in terms of regulating e-cigarettes. And I think there's going to be a long time before we exactly know what they're going to be able to do. And I personally don't think that they're going to completely take e-cigarettes off the market just because of, free choice and politics and such that we have to deal with. But just like with traditional tobacco cigarettes, one of the most effective ways of changing behavior has been with excise taxes on the cigarettes. I am sure there will be excise taxes, or feel pretty sure, on e-cigs, and hopefully that will deter young adults from using them.
Mike, your final thoughts on this?
Well, the web is, I've got a lot of information, some of which, maybe even much of which, is not very helpful. But there are good places to go to get more information if you're an interested adult. I mentioned two websites before, and there's dozens of others, perhaps. We're always available at the University of Cincinnati. If you do have a question, you can email us. Our emails are accessible, so you can email us questions. We'd be more than happy to try to help.
Jane?
Just one last thing I'd like to share. I don't know if people are aware of the energy source for e-cigarettes. I think are lithium batteries for the most part, and they can also be very dangerous sometimes.
That's something else we don't fully know
igniting
about.
Igniting on their own, that's correct. So just for those people who are vapers, be aware of how you handle these things as well. I know every time I've been on a plane, I've always been reminded to not pack my e-cigarette in the cargo compartment of a plane, because it is very dangerous. But I agree with Mike. We have a lot of resources to us. I think there are lots of different programs to help people quit smoking. Your healthcare professionals are always very good at providing information, and I encourage people to consider looking into those as opposed to just switching to e-cigarettes, believing that they're all their problems are solved.
It sounds like there's still a lot of research to do on these as well.
One of the most successful types of smoking cessation programs are programs that use one-on-one counseling, and actually Dr. Prumer's program is that kind of program. So if you're looking for smoking cessation, that's one thing to look for.
We have links to everything on our website, wvxu.org. And Jane, Susan, and Mike, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
All right. You're welcome.
University of Cincinnati Department of Environmental Health professor and epidemiologist member of the UC Cancer Institute and Cincinnati Cancer Center, Dr. Susan Penny, professor at the UC College of Pharmacy, Dr. Jane Premer, and professor at the UC College of Medicine and director for the Toxicology Excellence for Risk Assessment Center, Dr. Michael Dorson. And coming up, a look at the Cincinnati Nature Center's new Center for Conservation and Stewardship. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.